Hello everyone, welcome to the Local Shop Podcast. I'm your host Chris Noyce, and this is the podcast for everything to do with the convenience sector and the issues facing local shops. This episode of the podcast is the second of a three-parter on the 2019 Local Shop Report. It's one of our biggest launches of the year, and on this episode of the podcast, we'll be going to a live panel session from the launch event in the National Space Centre in Leicester, where the panel featured Amish Shingardia, who's a Londis retailer, Amit Puntenbecker, who's a NISO retailer, Vicky Lockie, who's head of key accounts at NISA, and Graham Salt, who is a retail consultant and commentator who you might be familiar with on online and on Twitter. A couple of disclaimers on this. The sound quality might be a little bit different as it was recorded live at the event, and it's slightly longer than our usual podcast at about 30 minutes. So I won't hold us off any longer. Let's get straight into the panel and go across back to Leicester, where we recorded this episode live. Now, Amit, I'll start with you. When I came to see the store, we came and did the filming a few months ago. We talked about your investment in the business, what you're planning to do, and you talked about when you were planning to start. Is that still when you're planning to start, or are we backed up again?
No, we finally got a set date, Monday the 30th of September. Shut for 2 weeks, reopening October 14th, opening of Parliament as well, I believe. So, fantastic. So, yeah, we'll be all set to go. Then we're going to have, a grand opening, maybe 2 weeks after, once we've all settled in. We're going to get the local MP involved and a few suppliers.
And you mentioned right at the start of the video about some of the building that's going on in the area. What are the challenges that you've seen in planning that investment to deal with a sort of wider demographic of customers?
Yeah. So it's all starting at the moment with your construction workers. So we're seeing a huge increase in kind of food to go, snack products, lunchtime meals almost. So we're at almost a perfect stage at the moment where we can afford to take risk, because we're getting an influx of trade, and then going forward, obviously, as the families start moving into the houses, you're going to get that kind of regular trade getting replaced, like for like in different areas of the business. So what we're kind of expecting is maybe more produce, more meat instead of your pork pies, your sandwiches, etc. So I didn't talk about kind of the meterage at the moment, but we're looking to over double our refrigeration. At the moment we have 8 meters, we're going to 18.5, so we've got huge scope to increase a lot. And working with NISA and Co-op, fantastic availability in their ranging, because one of the key reasons why we're doing this development.
And one of the things you mentioned just then was about risk. How do you weigh up what's worth risking? As you're an independent retailer, we talked earlier about a lot of this coming from retailers' own reserves. A big investment is a big risk. How do you sort of balance that up?
I love numbers. I like looking at data. I think it's essential. We have so much data.
You're in
data.
The right place today, then. So.
We have so much data at our fingertips. Retailers, I don't think, use it enough or in the most efficient way possible. So I kind of work backwards from the costings of the refit, and I looked at how much we need to increase our turnover by to make that viable. So we only have to increase our turnover by 15% to make the refit viable, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And Amish, your store, when you took it on, was... and you don't mind saying, was at the time the worst store in Sussex voted?
Yeah, that's correct.
Which is, I don't see you with a certificate up there, but that's fine. Of course, that is a big risk in itself, taking on a store that has that sort of moniker. How did you turn that store around? What kind of journey did you go through to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. We bought it in 2015, and what we did is we ran it for 6 months while planning a refit, and we just looked at what was going wrong with the store. So I think the major issues with the store was really overpriced, out-of-date products. And then we started in looking at what our local competitors were doing in the local area and trying to find their weaknesses, look at our strengths. So we went to visit other top retailers in the UK. And, after 6 months, we relaunched the store. And yeah, we had about 50% uplift in sales in the first year. And then from that point, every year we've continuously reevaluated it.
Sure.
Done more and more reinvestments. So when we first launched the store, we put in a post office. We expanded the chilled by about 10 metres, put in a brand new food to go area. And, you know, we keep on mixing it up a little bit every year.
And was it a very quick turnaround in terms of customers being able to trust the store again for a wider range of things? Because we hear a lot about perhaps sometimes retailers will put something in and not go through the full sort of customer journey to establish that trust.
No, to be fair, it takes us a very long time. Okay. To build that customer trust up. It's not something you can do initially. Even like in our fifth year now, we've got up 12.5% on year. And I just think that's by customers trusting us, we'll bring up the reputation still with new customers every year.
Yeah.
So, you know, we are still very lucky in that way, that it's still growing because of that.
Yeah, great. And Vicky, you deal with a lot of retailers across the UK. Mm-hmm. What do you see as some of the risks that retailers perhaps should be taking to grow their businesses at the moment?
Well, from a nicer perspective, there's certainly so much opportunity with integrating the co-op. And if we, as a team, demonstrate to retailers the benefits that can be had by taking more risk, and we can show them the return on investment and make it really clear to them what the end goal could look like, then kind of hand-holding through that process. Implementing the co-op's been a task and a half. We've put 2,100 products in now, and we help putting planograms in place, and also help people with the investment and obviously modelling. And I think that from a co-op perspective, we've got the brand now, we've got the own label. The proposition's improved hugely. It's just about the education piece now with retailers to get them to trust what we've done.
Yeah.
Certainly through the bigger accounts that I see day to day, they were crying out for more breadth and depth into their range. So now that they've got fully behind co-op, the sales are starting to come through and the margin aspirations are there.
Great. And Graham, you're an expert on the wider high street, the wider retail landscape. Famously, early on, went through and looked at every previous Woolworths store and what happened to it, which is sort of a little microcosm of what happens to the high street. Mm. Some retailers on the high street are very risk averse, have stood still and have suffered because of it. When you see convenience stores on high streets and as part of the wider retail sector, where do they sit for you in terms of being innovative or perhaps being a bit stood still?
Yeah, I spend most of my time talking about high streets and town centres, so it's really exciting actually to see that stat about 80% of the convenience stores not being in that environment. And I suppose those stores are almost like a high street in miniature. Particularly as they add on extra services like post offices and banks and even fashion in a way, if you're kind of ordering your parcels and things via those stores. But I suppose if you look at the high street, there are parallels in terms of what's working there and what convenience retailers are doing. And it tends to be about convenience, of course. So the retailers on the high street who are convenient and selling things in the right way at the right times are doing well. The ones who are offering great value are doing well as well, and quality too. So I think those are the same themes that we're seeing today in terms of what the best convenience retailers are doing, offering something that goes beyond just being there because it's the nearest place, but doing more to really attract people in from competitors.
Mm. I'm glad you said about services and stores being almost a mini high street in themselves. It's something we talk about pretty much every year, and James will come onto it. We talk about communities and the customers of community stores really value the range of services. I'll start with you, Amish. You mentioned putting in post office as being important to the business. How important generally has widening services been to that transformation of your store?
It's been really crucial. An interesting thing was, I can't name names, but like we had a coffee machine in, and it was a very well known brand, and we made a mistake. We thought we got rid of it for like a lower very well known coffee machine because they thought it'd be more profitable for us. And what we found was that the customers, we had a 60% drop in sales, and we never recovered it. So what we found is that brand names has done very well for us. So we keep on learning. But I think what we've done is we've tried to put in as many services as we can over the years. So obviously, Post office was crucial, food to go, we put in like cooks. And you know, for the future, we're looking to put a vaping inside the store, mm-hmm. a whole vaping, and that's going to go online as well. So it'll be like a proper mini vape store inside of the store. So as many services as we can has been very, very key for us.
Right. And Amit, you're in the process of re-evaluating your store, changing what it's all about. How important is service provision in your vision of what your store is going to be in the future?
So I think everything depends on your store area, your demographics, what's yeah. around you. We're in a rural area, we're really isolated. Our local post office is actually looking to close down potentially. So people use and they actually rely on you to provide these services. It's not just, it's kind of seen as a norm, if that makes sense. People expect you to do these services. We no longer do PayPoint, but we still get people expecting us to have a PayPoint service. So you have to match the customer expectations, otherwise their experience will decline and they might be doing incremental shops in different places.
And Vicky, about services across the Knightsbridge estate, how important is that to, you know, getting customers in stores for more than just products?
Yeah, it's about in and outside, because we are starting to utilise Deliveroo and other mechanisms now, particularly in the centre of London, for our accounts. I think it's you kind of hit the nail on the head. It's what the customer is starting to expect. There's an expectation there now that the shop provides much more than it used to provide. Therefore, we've got to adapt. And we would make a recommendation to retailers upon them refitting and reviewing their store formats to say, look, these are your options and you can offer something slightly different. Mm.
And so, Graham, we talk a lot about online and growth of online and I guess that being both a challenge and an opportunity. It's very well documented that high streets sort of point the finger at online retailers a bit. How do you see that shaking out in the next few years? Is there going to be a continued decline in bricks and mortar stores, or is there some way that they can work together?
Mm-hmm. It's certainly the case that online retail is getting bigger and bigger. It's still not a huge proportion of the overall market. It's about 20% or less than that, but it's obviously going to keep growing and keep growing. And so I'm always making the point that the retailers that thrive on the high street or in the physical environment are the ones that make a virtue somehow of being in that place. And it might be because of the convenience of being able to pop in and buy something straight away, or it might be because the experience that they offer is something unique, or in the case of the independent retailers I often work with, it might be that the products they're offering are something that is unique as well. So it's really about playing to the strengths of what you can offer in your location. And it's good to hear that coming out today. People looking at what's around and thinking, okay, so-and-so isn't doing that, so you know, what opportunity is there for us to fill that gap and offer something distinctive? And again, by and large, it's the retailers that don't look around at what others are doing or look at themselves and think, you know, how do we need to change? It's the ones that aren't doing that are the ones that are struggling. Stores like BHS and all the others that have gone are the ones that haven't adapted, that haven't responded to what people are wanting. So it's really heartening for me to hear of convenience stores that are, you know, investing and adapting. I suppose one thing that I would flag is that it wasn't mentioned in the report, I think, but an area that I'm always going on about is curb appeal, and I think sure. It's so important as well to invest in the appearance of the outside of stores, and certainly with nicer, I think we're seeing a lot of that. A lot of nicer stores are looking much better than they have done for a long time, but there are still plenty of convenience stores that I see that, you know, don't look appealing. You can't see into them. It's dark. It's hard to see what they offer. So I'd like to see much more of making a good impression, you know, on the storefront as well, to really entice people in and to showcase what you offer.
Yeah. So Vicky, you're part of this process. What's the intention of sort of the newer, nicer stores and what they're planning to convey to customers?
Mm. So we launched our evolution format at Stoneleigh this year, and it's much more around, you said, curb appeal, about opening up the front of store and making it look appealing from the road. But the whole experience in store is entirely different now. You actually enjoy being in the shops, and it feels completely different. And the look and feel and the perception for customers is a huge difference. And then when they move to fixture, if they if we've gone to planogram and the execution and range are there, we're three quarters of the way there. Mm. The other elements, obviously, giving them the other services that they require.
And Amit, you're going through this process at the moment. Is there much change to the outside of the store, or is it all internal?
So we've recently re-kitted the whole of the outside of the store. It wasn't very visible. But we did spend a considerable amount of money on that, more so than I think we should have done. But appearances are everything. If most of our trade is return, but the transient customers, they're going to look at your outside and they're going to make a judgment call. Oh, this doesn't look very nice. This looks nice. And that snap second, that snap appearance, that's the difference between a sale and someone just, well, we'll wait. We'll go to the next place we see.
Yeah, so it's really interesting because if you're going to a store that doesn't look its best, you're almost on the back foot already, aren't you? Once you walk in the door, you're trying to get people to trust what you're doing is much more difficult. Amish, you've changed the outside of the store as well. Did that have an immediate impact when you did that?
Yeah, absolutely did. Like Amish just said, all customer perception is key. But also, like you've also said in the report, is online as well. Gives you much, much wider audience. We've done a lot of work online, and that's also helped us a lot.
Mm. I just want to talk a bit about the products we sell, the things that we sell that James was talking about earlier. Amit, I'll start with you. You mentioned the film. You're clearly passionate about refrigeration and getting that into the store. And James talked about you not being able to sort of play at being a food to go retailer. You either are or you aren't. You really have to invest in that. With this new investment, do you feel that you are a food to go retailer?
Let's see how successful it is. Anyone who's known me for the last couple of years, they'll know how a lot of my concerns about food to go. I didn't think my village it would be a success. So this is quite a big step for me personally going forward. But what we are tending to see now, people do want fresher produce, and especially a lot of the bake-off elements. We do have a local bakery in the village. So, you know, people are buying these, you know, products elsewhere. So why can't we bring them into our store and then they can do a whole shop with us? So I'm not sure yet. I don't like to say yes because sure. We have to see how it goes. But I certainly think we're seeing a high demand for coffee now. Customers who are now aware of the refit, they're asking me questions. What are you doing? Are you bringing coffee in? That's the most asked question so far. So we had a coffee machine originally and it didn't work. And I think that put us off that whole element. Mm. But I think the village is now ready to take those steps. And I think it's up to now me to grow and develop these new areas. We have to take the risk. You have to have constant availability. Your pricing has to be right. And, you know, you have to make sure the products look great. Otherwise, it's not going to work.
Yeah. And Vicky, is it right for everyone to try and be that kind of retailer? Or are there some locations where it just doesn't work that way?
There are some locations where it just doesn't work. But then we've proven some demographics, some really low demographic stores. We've got one in Fletton, and they have created the most amazing food-to-go offer. You wouldn't have thought originally that freshly squeezed orange juice and the pizzas and smoothies would go down well, but they absolutely are. And he, you know, Siver, and a lot of you in the room will know him, he's absolutely nailed it in that site. And then he'll just follow suit because he's got another, you know, handful of stores, and he's going to look at implementing something similar through the rest of the estate.
And Graham, do you see convenience stores competing with other food to go places like Greggs, like McDonald's, like Wetherspoons on high streets? Do you see them in that space now?
Totally, yes. I'm from Newcastle, so I'm a big fan of Greggs, and we're very proud, I think, of what Greggs has achieved in turning itself from a bakery into a food-to-go retailer. But certainly, convenience stores, have huge potential because what I think is great about the independent ones in particular is that what we're hearing today is about having those conversations with customers, finding out what they want, what they like, what they don't want, and that's where independents have the advantage over your Sainsbury's locals and Tesco Expresses, for example. Those are often, by and large, much the same as each other, whereas the independents can really understand their communities and tailor their offer to meet the needs of the local people. And we're hearing examples today of of retailers doing that really well. So I think, I'm very optimistic about convenience stores, and certainly I think in terms of the independent multiple split, we're at the point now where the big names, the big supermarket names, have pretty much drawn to a halt their expansion of convenience stores, which leaves it open to the independents and the symbols and all that kind of thing to really make their mark instead.
Mm, great. And Vicky, we're going to talk about communities and the importance of communities and community activity later on in the presentation. Do you think retailers on the whole are doing enough to talk about the community work that they're doing? Because we hear, whenever I go into a store, I see things behind the desks, I see things behind the tills about all the community work that retailers are doing, and yet I probably don't necessarily see it in local papers, trade press as much as I perhaps would expect.
We use our charity, so we use Making a Difference Locally. That's our Achilles heel, to connect the community up to the nicer store. When I look at some of the donations that are made, some of them are tiny, but they have such an impact. You know, they're quite widespread across communities and make a difference to football teams and schools, you know, various hospices, various things. That's PR activities put onto social media, so they use Facebook to share the information, they use local press, LinkedIn, various other mechanisms. But it's about becoming famous. Those children know that store's famous because they've helped them with football shirts, whatever that looks like.
Mm. And Amish, how important is community engagement to your business?
It's been very crucial for us. We've done a lot of work with the local communities, and we've tried to become the hub of the community. We support local events. We budget about £600 a year just on community events. So it has been really, really crucial for us.
Mm. And Amit, the same. Of course, with investment in the store comes a wider customer base.
Yeah.
That is now your community. What's your plan to engage with your new wider demographic and new houses?
So we're really active anyway in the community, supporting almost any village event. We've got our name out there. We're providing free water, free drinks, some free food, etc. We used to support the local football team. We still support their second team. And going forward, we're looking to help out the primary school, set up a uniform fund. So every year we can maybe put £500 to £1,000 towards making sure kids have all adequate kit wear. To me, I think schools are a really great avenue for retailers to kind of utilise. You know, there's a big focus on healthy living at schools.
Mm.
So, you know, work with your local school, and you know, they figure out what they're allowed to eat in their lunchboxes. So you can kind of, you want that close network between you and the future generation or shoppers in your store, you can start early.
And Graham, thinking about the wider high street and wider retail environment, are there any retailers that are doing anything particularly innovative when it comes to community engagement, when it comes to giving something extra for customers?
Cracky.
You could say convenience stores.
Well yes. to be fair, asking me that question, the first thing I think of is convenience stores, because if you look at the Co-op, for example, the Co-op is a retailer that I think it had lost its way for quite a long time, and I've quite often been in Co-op news arguing that the Co-op it needed to understand its heritage a bit more and to embrace those local values that had made it what it was in the first place. And as part of the current rebrand with the blue logo and bringing back all that kind of thing, I think the Co-op has really found its place again. It started to understand what the essence of a Co-op is, about being rooted in the community and serving that community. So I think Co-ops are very good at doing that in terms of the brand, but also the kind of in-store messaging and the loyalty card and so on. Among the big retailers, I suppose it's hard to think of many examples of retailers that are really locally rooted. I suppose partly it comes down to social media as well, because again, there are some retailers like Waterstones, like Jewels, Lakeland as well, that give the control of social media to the local store. So rather than just having a one boring national account, it's devolved to the store level. So you get a much more interesting level of communication. It's much more localized, much more human. As I know from my own work, that every time I'm working with a small retailer and we share a picture of them, you know, on Facebook or Twitter or whatever, it goes really well. People love to see pictures of the shopkeepers, of the staff, of the people who are serving their community. So I think those retailers on the national stage who understand that actually people want to see a bit more of the local stores and a bit less of the boring national messaging are doing it right. Mm.
And we're obviously really well placed to deliver that. Over 400,000 colleagues that really enjoy, the number one thing they like doing is talking to customers. So, you know, it's good that we can empower them to do that. So final question to everyone, then I'll start with you, Amish. Katie mentioned some of the services and technology that stores are putting in place. What one service or piece of tech, or it could be a gadget, whatever it might be, do you think will be potentially transformational in your business in the coming years? And it could be any cost. So we're talking Elon Musk style, anything you like.
I generally think, and we're very weak on it truthfully, is click and collect.
Right.
I do think that's something which we should be doing a lot more of digitally. And I think also linking in with that is like loyalty schemes. So that's something I really do want to work on.
Okay, and is that so specifically for loyalty scheme for your store or for the store of all of the businesses as well?
Probably just more my store, but yeah.
Yeah, and a little preview, we're going to talk to Amish, has got a video a bit later about working in a family business as well, so a few stores there. Amit, tech, gadget, what could potentially be transformational for your business with an unlimited budget?
I mean, going forward, the obvious one in the room is self-serve. Personally, I'm a fan of like a hybrid model, so not fully self-service, but your staff can turn a screen around to make it self-service. I think it's just the way forward. You know, the big retailers have been doing it for years. A lot of now independents are starting to utilize this technology. Nicer and Co-op have reeled out a fantastic bit of kit. I think more retailers will have to try and get past this fear of wastage. There's a lot of positive elements about self-service, both for the retailer and the customer.
Yeah. And Vicky, same question.
Yeah, it's definitely around self-serve and headsets, because we're now budding up with a Co-op to use their technology, certainly to reduce the cost to make it available for retailers to use self-scan. Some quotes I've known come back at £10,000 and £15,000, and it's much, much, much less than that if it's some kit, you know, that links up to our EPOS system. Mm. So it opens up lots of opportunity.
Sure. And Graham, if we could go onto the high street, perhaps in Newcastle or even other cities around the country, and go into a store that's doing something that could be transformational for convenience stores in terms of tech or services, where would you send us?
Goodness. Where would I send you? I tend to argue that the retailers in the physical space who are embracing tech well are the ones who are doing stuff behind the scenes in many ways. So it's more about stock control and supply chain and the things maybe not on the customer side. Because I always argue that actually one of the strengths of bricks and mortar retail for the customer is that it does have that human element, and we shouldn't lose sight of that. We shouldn't lose sight of the fact that one of the reasons that lots of people go into a convenience store is to actually have a conversation. They might be someone who doesn't get to see a real person very often. So I'm a big fan of championing the human aspects of going into a physical store alongside using tech to make stuff cleverer behind the scenes that then frees up more staff time to actually focus on the customer.
Yeah, that's a really good point to finish on, in that I think what we've heard here is that colleagues like talking to staff. They probably don't like stacking shelves as much, although, you know, it's the job, it's what you pay for. But if we're putting in things like self-service, it's not necessarily just to get rid of staff numbers. And we've seen that this year. The numbers of colleagues have actually gone up slightly compared to last year. It's to get them away from those perhaps menial tasks and get them through to tasks of added value, which is talking to customers and having that experience. And I think that's that's something that really sets us apart and is unique to the convenience sector.